the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Simon Richards, and I'm going to be taking us through the next in our series in Galatians. Ruth, thank you very much for reading through our healthy chunk of Galatians that we've got this evening. And so you may have seen, if you have a focus, that we've titled tonight's talk Constructive Confrontation. Okay, so we're going to be carrying on in our series, It Was for Freedom. It was a couple of weeks back that Derek began our series looking at the freedom that we have in the gospel and how we can be tempted to run away from it, how we can be tempted to turn back to an old way of living. And this evening, what we're going to do is take a look at what happens when that freedom is under threat, when that precious freedom that Jesus has bought for us by his blood on the cross, what happens when that is under threat? And we're going to see how it's absolutely vital for us, for us or for someone to make a stand and go forward with constructive confrontation. And if you were here at the last one in Galatians, it's now online, so you can listen to the first message. But you'll have heard Derek say something a little like this, which is that the theme running through the whole book is effectively this: the only thing that can set you free is the gospel, and you'll be tempted to turn away from the gospel. If you do turn away from the gospel, you won't be free. And that's the theme, and it runs through the entirety of Galatians. And so today we're now going to turn and consider what it means when that freedom is under threat. So the title for today, Constructive Confrontation, might seem, or even talking about confrontation in church, might seem a little bit odd. If you're not a Christian, or if you are a Christian, you've probably heard the phrase, turn the other cheek, which is pretty much the Jesus saying, be peaceful, turn the other cheek. And what we want to look at today is what are the conditions and when should we not do that? So most of the time, 95% of the time, we are turn the other cheek people. That's where we're going. That's the trajectory. We want to be peaceful. Turn the other cheek. But what are the conditions? When do we, or when should we, oppose someone to their face? Have a look down at Galatians chapter 2 and verse 11. I'll just go lower this a tad. I'm not as tall as I thought I was. Oh, man. So when Cephas came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he stood condemned. Well, so there's clearly two attributes that are important for a Christian. Turning the other cheek on one side and opposing someone to their face on the other. And what I want us to do in the time we have together is to have a think about when should be the time for peace and when should be the time for war. Just like Ecclesiastes 3, those seasons and times, when should be a time for peace and when should be a time for war. So the way we're going to do that is we're going to take two different scenarios where Paul deals with some kind of conflict, and he acts and he speaks in very different ways in those two scenarios. And when we look at those, we're hoping to shed light on what's at stake and why it is that someone will need to go for confrontation when freedom is under threat, when that precious freedom that we have is under threat. So, like I've said, the general trajectory for a Christian should be living at peace. We're just out of Christmas time. You all know your good Christmas verses. Isaiah 9, verse 7, of the increase of his government and peace, there will be no end. The general trajectory is peace, but on the way, there's going to be a little bit of conflict. Okay? So the general rule for the church might look like Galatians 2 and verse 9. Do you want to have a look? Look down at that. That's James, Cephas, and John, those who were esteemed as pillars, gave me and Barnabas the right hand of fellowship when they recognized the grace given to me. The ordinary state of affairs, Christians shaking hands, everybody getting on well, you go to do your work, I'll go to do my work, and we pray and hope that God blesses it. This is just unity, peaceful unity. Well, you may also have seen from your focus that David Coffey's talks from the weekend away are now online. And we took a look at something very, very akin to this topic we have tonight, when to be at peace and when to be in conflict. He looked at the Beatitudes, and in particular, in talk three, if you're interested in researching it, I'd recommend you go have a listen to the talks. They were fantastic. He drew the distinction that we have a tendency, and this is when looking at the Beatitude, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. We have a tendency to be peacekeepers and not peacemakers. So people who avoid conflict rather than obtain peace by going through conflict to the other side. Okay? And the circumstances that conspire in Galatians around Paul tonight that we're looking at require him to pretty much jump right in into constructive confrontation. Well, I don't know if you have any particular homely phrases or mantras in your house that kind of take on almost the stature and authority of scripture themselves. But in the Richards household growing up, my sister and I, we would hear regularly this phrase, and I wonder if you've used it, anything for a quiet life. It sounds like maybe you have. Anything for a quiet life. And this, I think, neatly sums up the way we feel about conflict. It's a British colloquialism. Apologies if you're not British and you've not heard that one before. Anything for a quiet life. It neatly sums up the fact that we would make any concession, any compromise. We would do absolutely anything in order to avoid being disturbed, in order to avoid running into any kind of conflict. It's pretty much an Englishman and his castle kind of scenario, whereby we don't want to be disturbed by anything. We would do absolutely anything for a quiet life. So we have a tendency, I think, if you're anything like me, to avoid conflict. But the passages that we have in front of us today in Galatians, the big theme and the big point is that when freedom is under threat, we must conduct and go for constructive confrontation. I really don't like conflict. Last week, where I work in a software company, I work in software sales, and we had our Japanese distributors visit. So I have been practicing all week my kind of my bowing and my looking and buying them gifts and doing lots of things to ensure that everything went smooth. But we're going through quite a few changes. We want to do various different things in the company, and they're not happy with the outcome. And I was absolutely dreading this meeting. And after the meeting, we all went for a meal. It turned out they were dreading it too. Avoiding conflict, it crosses cultures, and we all want to avoid it as much as possible. So by having a look at these two cases, these two scenarios, we just want to see when should we turn the other cheek and when should we oppose someone to their face. And the way we're going to do that is take a look at freedom under threat. So I want to bring to you two cases. Here's case one. This is Paul in a scenario. Case one is the terrible brothers in Rome. And in Paul's letter to the Philippians, you've no need to turn there at all. I'm just describing a situation. The situation is that Paul is in prison in Rome, and there are people around him who are preaching the gospel for absolutely abhorrent reasons, absolutely terrible reasons. They're preaching it out of envy, jealousy, rivalry, bitterness. They've turned the teaching of the gospel into something to serve their petty ambitions and their petty desires. And this dreadful practice has come to the attention of Paul. And so we read these words. It is true that some preach Christ out of envy and some out of selfish ambition, supposing that they can stir up trouble for me whilst I'm in chains. So that's the scenario. What's the response going to be? Is it going to be peace or conflict? What do you think? Well, the response is this. Paul says, in response to these disgusting and horrible actions and motives behind these guys preaching, he says this, verse 18 of chapter 1 of Philippians, verse 18. But what does it matter? The important thing is that in every way, whether from false motive or true, Christ is preached. This is unbelievable. This is outrageous. There's a commentator, J. Gresham Machen, who writes in his book, Christianity and Liberalism, and I have to give you this quote, because rarely do people say this about Paul. He says, in this case, it is impossible to conceive of a finer piece of broad-minded tolerance. How fantastic is that? There are these people with absolutely dreadful motives, dreadful motives, but the content was right. The content of the message and what they were saying was absolutely right. And Paul says, but what does it matter? The important thing is that in every way, whether from false motive or true, Christ is preached. And because of this, I rejoice. So that's case one, the Roman case, the terrible brothers in Rome. Case two, the false brothers in Antioch. And that's where we are tonight. Let's have a look at Galatians chapter 2 from verse 11. So when Cephas, that's Peter, came to Antioch, we're in Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he stood condemned. For before certain people came from James, he used to eat with the Gentiles. But when they arrived, he began to draw back and separate himself from the Gentiles because he was afraid of those who belonged to the circumcision group. The other Jews joined him in his hypocrisy, so that by their hypocrisy, even Barnabas was led astray. And when I saw that they were not acting in line with the truth of the gospel, I said to Cephas in front of them all, "You are a Jew, yet you live like a Gentile and not like a Jew. How is it then that you force Gentiles to follow Jewish customs?" Well, this is a really public and very visible quarrel. You can imagine the kind of massive meal that's going on in a room. The room just goes quiet and all eyes are on Paul, who stood up to confront Peter. This is a very public and visible quarrel. And Peter's error is that by association, he has joined with false teachers. But why is Paul standing up? Why is he being so aggressive? Why is he being so intolerant on this matter when he was so tolerant back there in Rome in case one? Well, is it that he's extremely aggressive? Is it that he's got something against Peter? Is it that he's just flying off the handle for no reason at all? Or is he just being picky? And I think here, in the Antioch case, Paul is being completely intolerant because the content of the message was false. It had nothing to do with personality whatsoever. So when should we turn the other cheek? When should we oppose someone to their face? Well, in Rome, Paul was tolerant because the content of the message that was being proclaimed was true. It was right, even though the motives were bad. But in Antioch, he was intolerant because the content of the rival message was false. And so when we're thinking about when we should come into potential conflict or whether we should be at peace with someone, perhaps we should put away thinking about personalities or personal grievances and think, what is the truth? What are the facts? What are the truth at the bottom of the matter? And so for Paul, something like and Paul in these two cases, it's clear that the gospel and this freedom makes us family. I called the first case terrible brothers, and the second case false brothers. And for Paul, blood is thicker than water. You can let your family get away with quite a lot. But false brothers, when this message is wrong, then there's the time to come to confrontation. So when should we confront? When freedom, gospel freedom, is under threat. And when you first take a look at it, it might look like a petty squabble, mightn't it? But what we have to do is take a brief look at the nature of the threat. What exactly is it that Paul is opposing when he stands up face to face and says to Peter, you are wrong? Well, behind the playground squabble is actually a fight for the truth and clarity of the gospel. It looks like Peter is just turning to a different dinner table, but he's in fact, Paul accuses him of turning to a different gospel, admittedly by association, but he still accuses him of turning to a different gospel. Do you remember this from chapter 1? I'm astonished that you are so, this is verses 6 and 7, I'm astonished that you are so quickly deserting the one who called you by the grace of Christ and are turning to a different gospel, which is really no gospel at all. Evidently, some people are throwing you into confusion and are trying to pervert the gospel of Christ. And the point I want to make here is that the nature of the threat is a perversion of the gospel. It's not something completely new. It's not something out of left field. It's not a wholesale different religion. It's a perversion. It's a distortion, a twisting, a contorting. Something, some small bit is just slightly off. What is it? Well, these people, these false teachers, would have had a great deal in common with those teaching the true, pure, free gospel. They would have believed that Jesus is the Messiah. Tick. They'd have believed Jesus was God. Tick. They believed Jesus has risen from the dead. Tick. They even believed that faith in Christ was necessary for salvation. Big tick. But the problem was, and it's in the minutiae, God is in the detail, the problem was, the point of contention was that they believed something else was necessary. Faith in Jesus and works of the law. And it is faith in Jesus alone that Paul is going to fight for. And he said, that's a good reason for constructive confrontation. Well, it looks to be as simple as this, that Paul had always advocated the gospel and that there was to be no more, no less. No new stuff added, nothing taken away. And these false teachers wanted to add something. They wanted to add something to faith. So I think it's just as simple as the our good guys, Paul, on this side, they had the order right. They had it as right at the top, believe on Christ. Next, you're justified before God. And three, now go and keep God's law. And on the other side, the false teachers, they were just mixing it up. They were playing with the details. And what they were saying was, one, believe on Christ. Two, keep God's law. And three, you are then, by keeping God's law, justified before God. And if that's the case, then, as Paul says right at the end of our passage here, Christ died for no purpose. Take a look down at Galatians 2 and verse 21. if this is the case, if it really is the case that justification could be obtained through the law, then Christ died for no purpose. Verse 21, I do not set aside the grace of God, for if righteousness could be gained through the law, Christ died for nothing. And Paul wants to have those two in your mind and separate and drive a massive wedge between the two. He says those two things are different gospels. They're effectively different religions. They're as different from one another as Christianity and Islam, the gospel of grace and the gospel of works. And in neither case does it depend on personality. The importance here is the precise and exact truth of the gospel. I think there are always going to be folks out there who want to kind of get the spiritual smoke machine out and kind of whoosh it between these two polar opposites and make it seem foggy, and that there's really not too much difference between the two. But Galatians is the way that we just blow all that away, and we see clearly where we get our faith from. A pure, free gospel of grace. Well, we've had a look at when we might want to confront with one another, but now let's take a brief look at how we might go about doing it. It seems that 95% of the time we're going to be at peace, but in the 5% that we might come into confrontation with one another, how should we go about that? Well, I point you back once again to David Coffey's talks from the New Key Weekend away, and he described the peacemaker, and we can pretty much say that's the same as our confrontational, constructive confrontation, as having the following kind of criteria. He said, one, they should be honest. Two, they're going to be a risk taker. Three, a troublemaker. Four, focused on Christ. And five, prepared for pain. And I would recommend taking a look at that. And I think the one that stands out here is a risk taker. If we're going to confront someone, it's a risky business. We take a risk on ourselves in stepping out and into confrontation, and we just don't know what's going to happen next. And yet, in our passage here today, we see how vulnerable and almost small at times the freedom we have in Jesus is. And it needs someone, just on occasions, to stand up and defend it and keep it safe. And Paul seemed to be the only one at that point in time who was going to stand up and say, stand up for the pure, free gospel that we all believe in. And so the key one that seems to come out in how we should go about carrying out constructive confrontation is that we should be a risk taker, but evidently also being honest and a person of integrity. Being a troublemaker, so being almost a little bit provocative in his wanting to bring the freedom to bear. He probably was already thinking, there's going to come a point where there's going to be this flashpoint. How am I going to act? Focusing on Christ, who is our true peacemaker, and being prepared for pain. So that's maybe the kind of things we would think about in how we would confront. But as we come to an end here, I just wanted also to take a look at what it's like to maybe be confronted. Because the folks in our passage this evening, Peter and Paul, Peter's the chap being confronted, and he's a huge deal in the church, isn't he? And I think when we look at this confrontation, he's someone who we can learn a great deal from, and perhaps learn from his humility. And the only thing I want to draw here is potentially that if Peter can fall, I can fall. But if Peter can get up and carry on going, then I can get up and carry on going. And that any of this confrontation that we might be brought into is on this trajectory of peace. It's just like Isaiah 9, verse 7, of the increase of his government and peace, there will be no end. We are to be peacemakers on the route to that gospel peace that will one day cover the whole earth. So the theme, coming back to the very beginning of the whole book, was effectively this, that the only thing that will set you free is the gospel, and that you'll be tempted at different points to turn away from it. And if you do turn away, then you won't be truly free. And this evening, what we've had a brief look at here is living at peace, but being prepared to go in for constructive confrontation. 95% of the time we're peace, and we've just taken a brief look here at the 5% when we might be called to step out into constructive confrontation. When to confront, so when freedom, that precious freedom of the gospel, is threatened, and the importance of knowing the exact nature of what the threat is. It was in the details, wasn't it, for Paul? It was just a subtle change, but yet that was where God was. That was where the gospel was. It was in that detail of the free gospel of grace. And that when we are to confront with one another, we're to think about truth and not personality or personal grievances. And then briefly at the end there, what it would be like for us to be confronted, to remember that we are all weak people, and that just like Peter, we may fall, but just like Peter, we can stand and get up once again. And I want to just finish here by reading you from Isaiah chapter 9, verses 5 to 7, just to ground all this in the context of that trajectory of peace that will one day fill the entire earth. So from chapter 9 and verse 5, every warrior's boot used in battle and every garment rolled in blood will be destined for burning and will be fuel for the fire. For to us a child is born, and to us a son is given, and the government shall be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, and Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his governance and peace, there will be no end.